again. The moderator for the panel, Stefano Bagnacurioni, is not here, so I will step in. I have not prepared introductions for each of you, and I haven't really prepared an introduction for the panel itself. But pretty much what I just said about the relationship between the trajectory of biennials over the last 10 years is maybe a starting point. But also thinking about the title, Impacting the Context, what are the impacts on the cities, on the social environment, and economically as well, when a biennial either lands for the first time, or if it's one of the more established ones, how has the biennial been integrated into the local cultural and financial economy? Before we really start to discuss, maybe each of you could introduce yourselves and your roles and your relationships to biennial, because we have a very interesting spread on the panel with Douglas Fogel, Raffaele Majewski, and Ippolito Festellini-Naffarelli. So, Ippolito, you're
right. Well, I'm a partner of OMA. OMA is an architecture office founded in the late 1970s by Ron Coles. And I'm here because currently we're working on the, let's say, development and curatorial strategy for the next Manifesta 12, which will be in Palermo. In the past, we have curated biennials, not art biennials, we're not art people. We have intersected the art world through our architectural production, we've been curating in the past art biennials, architectural biennials. So basically, that's I think my role in the panel.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for having me. My name is Rafał Niemiecki, and I'm representing the Biennial Foundation, which is a non-profit organization that promotes biennials, that supports biennials, and perhaps even more importantly, that fosters the knowledge about biennials. So we like to think about ourselves as this body that sort of accommodates. The organization itself was established in 2009. It was based in Amsterdam for several years. 2 years ago we moved to New York, and but it's not accreditation body. It's not, in a way, I think it's very important, because people always ask me that. We're not a sort of organization that gives biennials accreditation and tells them, you know, that this is a biennial, this is not a biennial, etc. We really try to work as a think tank and accommodate the knowledge to look, you know, to collect all the sort of knowledge that is being produced around the world. Very often there are great essays, there are great catalog texts published, but not in English, nobody knows about it, they're very difficult to find out. So we organize conferences, we also have a commissioning program. The sort of three programs that we run are, to make it very simple, we call it Art, Knowledge, and Network. And this is really the three main things that the Biennial Foundation is about.
Yeah, I'm not either.
I thought it was
just 1:30. I'll just say briefly and then hand it over to you. My name is Douglas Fogel. I've been a museum curator for over 20 years at three different American museums, the Walker Art Center in Minneapolis, the Carnegie Museum of Art in Pittsburgh, and the Hammer Museum in Los Angeles. And I'm on the panel, I believe, because at the Carnegie Museum of Art, I was the curator of the 55th Carnegie International, which is the second oldest biennial-like exhibition in the world after Venice. So you guys win that battle. But I will tell you more about the history of that. It is a biennial, it's closer to documented. It's every 4 to 5 years. And it's an exhibition that was begun in 1896 as a way of bringing the world to Pittsburgh, which in 1896 was a very dark place. So I'll just say that.
Again, sorry for being late here. as you want, as you prepare.
I will.
Sorry.
I will just introduce Stefano because we thought about who would be the appropriate person, what kind of person would we want to consider these questions, and Stefano seemed like the perfect fit. So Stefano trained as an economic historian. He developed research projects on the history of economic thought and the history of the Italian stock exchanges. From the late 90s, he's concentrated on the analysis of the transformation of cultural production systems at the national and international level. And in particular, he's developed a study of the transformation of the Italian operatic system. And more recently, research on the global system of contemporary visual art. I won't list your various teaching, but suffice to say that when thinking about impact in the context, it seems that Stefano's overview of how, you know, having a very sort of deep roots into cultural systems, that you would be the right person to draw out the relationships between someone with direct biennial experience, someone who's managing a foundation that has a strategic overview of the biennial system, and an architect who has worked on architecture biennials but is now curating a visual arts biennial. Stefano, I hand over to
you. Thank you. I just have a question to raise to the panel. So, based on some consideration that we might share as a kind of very short introduction. The first point is that struck me in looking at the dynamic of biennial production around the world is the fact that if you look at the last 50 years, the dynamic of biennial creation at world level is in a sense symmetrical to the dynamic of fear in terms of quantity. What you see, if you look at the figures, probably at the beginning of the century, in the early 2000s, we had around 50 fairs around the world. Now we have more than 200, only talking about contemporary fairs. And probably we might recognize a similar kind of very fast evolution in numbers also in the biennial dimension. But this symmetry in the quantity of events is not reproduced if you look at the logistics of the places. In fact, if you look at ground level, the distribution of fairs in different continents and the distribution of biennials, you see that the biennials are not distributed in the same way. So they are doing something completely different from fairs. They are doing some work which is, in a sense, more similar to the museums. But they are exposed also to a different set of strategies which are related to the fact that cities are developing creative strategies, the cities want to build a map of cultural environments. So, basically, my question is there a dominant identity of biennial as cultural projects, or you think that each one has a different one? Which are the rules of the game for developing a well-established biennial? Is there places for a change in the hierarchical structure of biennial nowadays? We might think that, for example, Documenta is not exactly a biennial, but it's a pluriennial show. Documenta is dominating the scene, probably. Venice is also a very important and traditional one. There is space for new actors that are coming in, and this is Manifesta, which is the strategy of Manifesta in the relationship with the different landscape. So these are basically the questions that I wanted to address the panel. Maybe we can open the discussion and then try to find
I what I alluded to before in the exhibition that I did in 2008, the Carnegie International, it's being one of the oldest biennial-like programs in the world after Venice, but it was very much locked and has been locked into a single building in a city.
It is not an itinerant project. It is not a project that that tends to branch that far beyond the boundaries of the institution. And I think part of what we need to talk about also is the history of these institutions and these programs. Documenta being an exemplary exhibition in terms of the idea of redevelopment and redevelopment of a particular region in Germany. It was very specifically set up as a exhibition that would help renovate, rehabilitate, and bring culture back to the post-war German landscape, cultural landscape. What Ipolito and I were speaking earlier, having a coffee, about the difference between those types of institutions and Documenta and the Carnegie also use certain buildings over and over again. But then Documenta reaches out, the manifesto moves from city to city. So already there's this model of an exhibition which is itinerant, which, you know, in some ways, the question based on what Stefano brought up that I would like to kind of address is a question, there's a political question, there's a question of capital, and there's a question of art. And there's a question of how a curator works in the context of this, what the goals of a biennial, new or old, are for the city, for the stakeholders in that institution, in that exhibition. There's so many layers that go into that, because in the end, exhibitions are very much tied to funding, capital, whatever you want to call it. There is a kind of give and take between these things. So I would love to hear from you, Ipolito, like what you have.
Yeah, I think Manifesta is in itself, of course, a very unique model. And it's a unique model because it tries to reinvent its actual structure and curatorial strategy edition after edition. And so in that sense, it doesn't have a dominant identity by definition. And I think the very fact that we are involved as architects in the premises, well, so basically set up a preparatory work that is actually preceding the curatorial development of the project, it's a proof of the need to actually try to redefine the model in which the event itself actually intersects the city. What I think it's quite interesting from this is that by shifting around the composition of the curatorial team, in this case in Palermo it will be highly interdisciplinary, we only have one art curator in the team. The rest is composed by me as a partner of an architectural and research office, including AMO, of course, Saiki Oma. We have a filmmaker and documentarist, and we have basically an artist, scholar, architect, that basically we compose a team that is supposedly trying to not impose a concept on the city, but actually to extract the concept of the biennial from the city itself. That's actually the premise. The other premise is in fact to treat Manifesta this time more as a partnership. So we don't even call it an exhibition any longer. We call it a way to engage with the city, of course, with the local institutions, but also with a lot of grassroots organizations and independent citizens to initiate projects. We initiate projects which, in fact, are not responding necessarily to problems of the city, but in a way they're trying to be catalysts of some form of social change, and some sort of also of a structural change when it comes down to real projects. The reinjection of life into abandoned buildings or into the completion of projects that have been left empty and although they were planned and finished for a long time, or the idea to actually map, which is probably what is taking the majority of our effort at the time, all the single private institutions within the city do not have any kind of visibility. And how to make it visible? That's actually a topic that for me in Southern Italy is very, very, very strong. We have a lot of treasures that are distributed. How do you make that visible through a cultural and artistic operation? You can call an artist from outside, you can call a researcher from outside, and you can basically establish models in which this knowledge is actually made visible again. There is also something that maybe has a larger, for me, let's say, relevance, whether we can identify research in itself as a format for the exhibition, as a format for a visual art exhibition. Maybe this has to do with your question of having a dominant identity or not. I found, differently from, for example, the past edition of Manifesto in Zurich, which of course is a city that has completely different conditions from Palermo, Palermo as a city is typically a model of a city that doesn't really know itself. It needs to produce at the moment, in this moment of incredibly intense geopolitical transformations around the Mediterranean, a completely new mapping, a completely new knowledge. So the question that we are asking is that, can we actually turn this into a format for the exhibition? Can we actually ask artists or research collectives to identify a topic or a place and to turn that topic into a place into the actual knowledge that the city can use afterwards? So we can do this only because Manifesto allows us this freedom. And that's, I think, exactly in that degree of freedom to actually try to operate as a partnership, as a research entity, as an architectural office, as filmmakers, and so on. That's exactly that freedom that I think lies the identity of Manifesto or the DNA of Manifesto itself.
I would like to address two things. So I thought it was really interesting that you brought up the symmetry of the art fairs and museums. And I think what we see here, and I always think it's very useful to actually put the discussion about biennials into a broader subject and sort of analyze it against the broader ecosystem of contemporary art world. And I think what we've seen, it's sort of quite radical reshaping of photography. And biennials are only part of it, but so are art fairs and so are museums, which are also proliferating exponentially. I think right now there's something like 400 museums under construction in China itself alone. And what I find really interesting that we've seen also in recent years very conspicuous and interesting contaminations. And I think what we're doing here, for me, that's part of that contamination, because art fairs did not have talk programs before, and they did not have curated projects. So I would say that we actually, what we're seeing today, it's a biennialization of art fairs, or musealization of art fairs. There's also a similar process that could be, you know, told the other way around, so we could say that there's artfairization of biennials. But I think the example would be, you know, I will never forget when I went to Singapore Biennial for the first time. Oops, sorry, is it working? Yeah, okay. And so Singapore Biennial, the first edition, I believe, in 2006, there was actually one of the main sites of the exhibition of the Biennial was in this old city hall building, I think, or maybe it was a courthouse. And there was simultaneously an art fair that was running downstairs. So I think somehow it always runs in parallel, and I think I would say that one of the ways of forming the discussion here and looking at biennials and understanding what is the role within that broader ecosystem is specifically this aspect of biennials as generators of infrastructure for arts, because I think it's very important, and this is always, you know, something that you can bring. There's a lot of people who are very skeptical about biennials, they're very critical, but this is definitely a very strong argument for biennials, that we have a lot of examples when biennial functions as a generator for infrastructure for art. And the second one, which is much more conceptual, is also for me, but just as important, a biennial being a generator of public sphere. So this discussion, and I think it connects with what you said in with Manifesto, what you're planning, I think it's a new type of public sphere that biennials introduced that is completely interdisciplinary. This is also, we can observe this effect when contemporary art starts incorporating into its discourse all sorts of disciplines, from philosophy, quoted Zygmunt Bauman, that, you know, people like Jacques Rancière, Saskia Sampson, I mean, again, 20 years ago, the art conversation would be about art and not about philosophy, about science, about economy, etc. So I think biennials also play a very important part in that history, bringing together a selection, not only artists, but also critics, academics, curators, etc. And one of the ways that I always, I tend to frame it to understand better what's actually happening here, is that I look at biennials as exhibitions, but and I like to sort of pick up on two characteristics, which I think very important in regard to biennials being generators for public sphere and for infrastructure. And this is the time specificity of biennials and site specificity. And I think every curator of every biennial always comes across those two questions. So museums, let's say, there's always a historicity. There's always a notion of heritage in museums. However contemporary the museum is, it always has this story that it's somehow rooted in the history of a place. And the contemporary is always defined in relation to that history. What biennials usually do, it's exactly the opposite. Biennials are all about now, capturing a certain zeitgeist, capturing the moment, and thinking about the future. So I think this is one of the ideas. There's this emphasis of the new, and I think that also translates in the works that are shown in biennials, which usually represent sort of the new media, installation, and traditional media being underrepresented. And now when it comes to site specificity, I think there's always an expectation on the curator for a good biennial, or what the critics would say, that it is somehow site specific. And there are many, many different solutions here. From organizing exhibitions in historical buildings, in constructing entirely new buildings. I think the exhibitions that have their own venue are actually, there aren't that many. I would say that they're exceptional. So sort of the biennials hosted by museums, but there is also, to give you an example, like Gwangju Biennial in Korea that has its own perfect design building. But most of the biennials actually sort of occupy and store temporarily. And I think this demand for curator always to create some sort of very strong connection with the local and with the site is probably one of the biggest challenges, but also one of the ways of analyzing the exhibition.
If I might add some little piece of reflection on this, I can witness the fact that I was president of the commission that elected Palermo as the capital of culture, and for us, I might say now that the presence of Manifesta has been one of the assets that we consider exactly in the perspective of the creation of infrastructure for the city. So we didn't consider Manifesta as an important event for attracting people, because of course the energy of the city is much wider than the energy of a single biennial like Manifesta, but we consider Manifesta important as an organizational backbone for the whole territory. And this has been a way to recognizing the impact of biennials in terms of infrastructure in the city. The part on public sphere is, in my perspective, a little bit more problematic. Think about the Istanbul Biennial and the Gezi Park. That has been an astonishing situation in which the biennial was created exactly under the theme of the creation of new political subjects, had the creation of a political subject in front of it, and that creation silenced the public program of the biennial. So in a sense, there is a kind of problematic relationship. There is a relationship of the ecosystem of the contemporary art with politics, right? You have there a kind of boundary. And I don't know if this kind of experience has been also the experience that happened to other kind of institutions, whatever, but yeah, this problematic relationship with a political context.
Let's speak to that a little bit. The question I was thinking about is, Rafael, I was thinking as you just very beautifully said it, I mean, that we have a profusion of biennials around the world. There is always an intent with the founders of the biennial. There is a question of whether it's civic engagement. Engagement in the early
beginning of the century at museums, I was at, was always the big keyword, you know, engagement with communities. And I wonder if there's a question that you're talking about the curatorial intention of biennials, whether, you know, there's the idea of parachuting into a city for a year and a half. It's usually a year, because in the end, by the time someone gets appointed and the team gets together, you have about a year, maybe 14 months to do an exhibition, which is not a lot of time. And the quality and the actual, it's a real question for me about how the ethical responsibility one takes as a curator in precisely the kind of situation you're talking about. It's a little bit different in Istanbul, where it has become such an institution over the years, and with a foundation and whatnot, with newer biennials. And I always wonder and have to ask myself about how it's possible in a year and a half to properly engage in this way, that you're not simply coming into your show, hey, let's put on a show. And what is the profundity, or how deep can one actually impact? And I think that what Ippolito, you were speaking to, I mean, there's a real intention from the very beginning of the project in Palermo to transform or begin the catalyst, I guess, in a way. But I'm not sure it's the same with every other biennial that's happening, but, you know, I'd like to bring that up again.
Maybe I could cite one, I could actually quote one case of political engagement in the failed attempt. I mean, Nicosia 2006, the manifesto was actually cancelled when it was supposed to be an art school because of the conflict between the Turks and the Greeks. So, but in a way you could actually read that cancellation as a reason of, I mean, you can read it back as a reason of a successful intention. I mean, it didn't happen, but of course it's still some sort of extremely interesting debate about, you know, how much an event like this can engage with the political conflict that it has to deal with. I think there are two levels of infrastructure that you can actually generate. One level, we were asked quite openly, of course, to fix some problems. I mean, we were talking just before that we are confronting situations in which the political scene in Palermo is expecting Manifesta almost to act as a United Nations. I mean, we go there and we sort of make master plans, fix buildings, open new museums. I mean, you know, there is also budget involved, and we have to make it feasible to a certain extent. So it is precisely for that reason that we looked really to the ground, in a way, to actually smaller operations to make this intention more feasible and to sort of fill this void that is sometimes typical in Europe between grand plans, you know, of cities and in fact implementation. There's then a second degree of infrastructure that I think it's maybe interesting, that is networks. We are acting as catalysts of networks at the moment. We've been, launching a program that will link the University of Palermo with the Architecture Association, Royal College of Art, the Goldsmiths College, ATH in Zurich, and TU Delft, and many other schools that will all work next year on a research project on Palermo that will actually feed back into Manifesta. That's of course not, it's a form of, it's a component of our activity that when we cannot really do real, ambitious, visual, you know, visual projects that are able to attract maybe great numbers of visitors, we redirected basically our targets towards creating some sort of system that would enable Palermo to be linked to a much larger network after Manifesta.
Have you started working with artists already on
I think you raise a really interesting question. How can you actually be impactful in 14 months? Almost impossible, I would say. But you can be maybe impactful if you are able to start in advance in small steps, which is what Manifesta does. I mean, the first contact with Palermo, I think, happened already 6 years ago, under a different kind of leadership in the city and the different cultural advisors in the city. So you sort of can take it step by step only by enlarging the time frame. I think that the issue of the amount of time that you engage with the city is, of course, quite important. I think, going back to our role, the idea is in a way to decode this complexity in order to focus only on the three or four points where we can, where Manifesto can actually be really effective. That's what we are actually doing now.
I suggest also to stress the contradiction that you will find, because if you want to only to, let's say, develop the narrative of a nice infrastructure, I think you lose a very important part of the story, that is the fact that Palermo probably will not follow completely the story. And there will be a lot of points of contrast, particularly in some peripheries and some counter-cultural environments. So I think the important part of the story will be to raise also different kind of narrative in the city, right? So you will not do a classic arts biennial, you are doing a kind of cultural policy structure, which is not short time led, but also medium time, right?
Yes, just to answer your earlier question, I think the intensive public sphere biennials really, you know, let's not be naive. If you know, more sort of expectation there is for them to solve problems, a lot of them will fail, and a lot of them failed historically. But I think, as Ippolito said, that it's about the quality of the failure here. And I think it's about the capacity to reveal the problems and reveal the predicaments and reveal the conflicts in some cases, really. But I don't think we can expect really by us to just address the solutions and kind of, you know. I don't know if that answers the question.
Another story is the story of the Athens Biennial, you know, that was played by two different groups and with this idea of agora in one of the two and the other were more established. So in a sense, it's really...
I mean, there's a long history of those failures, and I think this is a great subject for an essay and for a book now that you're telling me. I'm going to get back home and get writing. But there is also a great example of São Paulo Biennial, I think 4 years ago, when they sort of been attacked by the taggers, when they're leaving the space open, the void, people want to do something, and then they all end up being arrested. And the Biennial, rather than embrace it, the conflict is sort of very, you know, awkwardly troubled with it. But maybe one more thing that I would like to point out is that I see a genuine trend now, because I think in the 90s, especially late 90s, early 2000, there was a lot of those international curators traveling and curating five different biennials, six different biennials in 1 year. Right now, I can really see having this sort of global outlook that more and more there is insistence of actually local people working on biennials. And I think one of the most successful examples we've seen recently is the new Kochi Museum Biennial in India, which is actually all sort of, you know, bottom-to-top structure, homegrown, only working with local artists who curate. Now in its first edition, actually, that just closed last week. So I think there's really now more a tendency of having, or at least having a team of curators that includes local people to avoid this parachuting effect.
This is a very interesting point. Of course, the growth of biennials happened in a moment of boom-bust globalization and economic growth. So this kind of inversion of tendencies, of course, a little bit of a sign of what does it mean globalization in a time of crisis. You know, how do you deal with globalization in a time of contraction in a way? The idea or the pressure, the idea of the tendency to actually involve as much as possible local forces, I think, is part of this, or to treat an event of this scale as agents of transformation, but maybe not agents of gentrification. You know, the two things don't really come always hand in hand. It's very difficult, but it's one of the questions that I think we should address.
I'm very curious about the relationship between Documenta and Athens, for example, and how that is going to play itself out this summer. We don't know yet. Having been in Athens about a month ago, you know, there's a lot of mixed feelings about it, even to the point of someone telling me that the Documenta salaries were less than some of the foundations that pay their own staff. Things like, which is just bizarre to me, that, I mean, that's, you know, it's just, I mean, the more radical gesture would have been to do the whole Documenta in Athens, if you really want to, you know, to be really radical, which would never happen, of course, because of the stakeholders in Germany.
I think it's problematic, but at the same time, if you look at history of Documenta, you'd also see that this is an exhibition that starts as a reaction to a trauma and to a problem. So in a way, bringing it to Athens now, which recently went or is still going into a sort of major crisis situation, I don't think it's actually that shocking. But like you say, I think that definitely it's kind of asking for trouble, taking Documenta to Athens.
Well, I mean, it'll be very curious what happens. I'm not against it. I just think it's an interesting question, and having spoken to some Athenian friends, there's a real division about what people feel about the Germans. You might put it that way.
You have thought about that? I just think that we have an example. We don't have people of Documenta here, so anyway, but we have an example in the last one with the Kabul, and listen to the people that are working in Kabul. The effect was double-edged, in the sense they were happy about the possibility of being, in a sense, recognized and as an artist there, but then they were left alone. I mean, so you are inspired in a sense. You think, I'm going to jump into the big machine, right? And then they go away, and you don't have a legacy. So the point of the legacy is crucial, and I think it will be crucial also for Athens, because in Athens, the infrastructure of contemporary art is particularly, it's a fragile. Think about the Athena Kunsthalle, or they're really small and fragile. So the point is how this kind of event, and the case of Palermo, and really full of hope about that, will leave a legacy in terms of capacities.
But I think this is another issue that has been coming up for me, talking to a lot of organizers and curators, you know, from various parts of the world. Is this question of the residual, what actually is going to stay after the biennial? And there are some great stories, you know. I can share one with you. Istanbul Biennial, I think it was in 2003. Brilliant, one of my favorite Italian artists, Monica Bonvicini, creates this staircase. So one of the venues was the old warehouse on Bosphorus, and basically it was very difficult to go from one floor to another. So she just dug up the hall and created this amazing suspended staircase. So the biennial, I don't know exactly, I don't want to speculate what kind of trouble there was at the end, but the work never got installed. It stayed there. And what happened is that one later, this building is being taken over and this amazing museum opens, Istanbul Modern. And what they did, they just purchased it for the collection and the staircase is still there. So it's just one example, kind of symbolic example, but I think we could, you know, going that path. Another example may be Sharjah, you know, when there is a biennial existing since the 90s, 2003 takes quite sort of dramatic turn, making it much more international. But then they actually, from the biennial, created a new structure, a new institution, which is called Sharjah Art Foundation, that now has venues and functions all year long, producing projects, having artist residencies. So I think these are very sort of tangible examples when biennial creates this infrastructure. And I wonder also if you're already thinking about the sort of aftermath of your project.
We are. There is no precise answer to this yet, in the sense that there are two levels, I think, of interventions. One thing is to actually establish a legacy through the support to maybe local contributors, without leaving them alone, of course, afterwards. I think in that sense, Manifesto has succeeded in the past to create a very strong network. It was able to pull out from previous editions experts, researchers, or artists that were then somehow reinjected into its own system. So that's one way, of course.
The other way is that we are looking to maybe more tangible forms of legacy, pinpointing places which we want to relaunch. One, I can just make an example, would be maybe Stefano knows it, the Teatro Garibaldi in Piazza Maggiore, a theater that had in the middle of the Arabic quarter of the city, with a beautiful story. It was opened and closed multiple times, recently robbed by local criminals and so on. It would be the actual epicenter of Manifesta. And with the previous resident company, Manifesta, we worked on a program that is called Aspettando Manifesta, something that was experimented with Bonami in Ljubljana a long time ago, to actually prepare the whole local population to the event. The theater we stay open and using this ear that we have to actually try to relaunch it, not just as a niche theatrical facility, but something as a sort of much more as a cultural hub.
I think we have time for any kind of questions that's coming from the audience. So I think that some of the things that came up from this discussion are, let's say, the specificity that the biennials might, let's say, more precisely in time being, assume in terms of infrastructure building for the cities and for local communities in terms of voices and public share, even if this is still not, we don't have the possibility to take, let's say, the responsibility for the real, let's say, development of the public sphere. And I think that Manifesta in Palermo, with the capital city of Italian culture, will be a great experimental situation. And at the same time, the impression is that the Biennale are much more exposed, like a kind of frontier. If you think about museums are more protected. Biennials have a critical mass that expose them in that moment to any kind of shock, external shock. They are much more open to the context. And in this perspective, I think that they really represent a kind of explorative moment for the development of the whole ecology of arts in a contemporary society. This is an interesting part of the story. And probably this awareness could be a reason for leading, let's say, further experiments in the biennial setting and form.
I would absolutely agree with you. I mean, there is no sort of single format or form or something. Biennial is really sort of like this container that can be filled pretty much. I mean, I believe, you know, discovering new stories, new solutions that curators or organizers bring year by year. So I think it is a completely open model, and you know, and we've seen one of the sort of big conferences about biennials a few years ago in Bergen, when they actually were debating whether they want a biennial or not, and they decided they just want sort of like this conference and then exhibitions, etc. But I mean, there's really a lot of room there for invention, I think. So I think, you know, just would like to say that maybe to finish on the optimistic note.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.